Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to another episode of the Daily Friend Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, reporting to you live, or not quite live, but almost live, from the first day of lockdown level 4, which is once again keeping us company, and lockdown day number 500 whatever for South Africa. I'm, of course, joined today by Mr. Terence Corrigan. Terence, how are you?
I am alive. I'm alive, yes. That's I will survive.
It's much better than the alternative. And Marius, whose webcam is still not fixed, but so we don't get to enjoy the wonders of his Benoni, sunny Benoni room, but we do get to see his smiling professional photo there. Marius, how are you?
How's it, Nick? How's it, Terence?
So, as I'm sure everyone knows, last night, the president locked down the country again, especially Gauteng. And I must say that it looks like everyone is unhappy. The news article I pulled as a sort of reference for this in my notes says that the decision has been criticized as too late by medical professionals, that opposition parties have attacked the president for failing in the first place to prevent this with vaccination drives. The EFF has called for active defiance and businesses upset. So it looks like basically everyone is annoyed with this, as am I must say. And I think we can get into that a little bit. So last night, alcohol sales were banned straight up. Restaurants were prevented from being able to sell to people in the restaurant. You can only do takeaways. And provincial travel in and out of Gauteng for reasons other than leisure, for leisure specifically, has been banned as well. The National Liquid Traders Council spokesperson said, quote, "A decision has been made that will have dire consequences for our members without us being given an opportunity to propose alternative solutions. We will be deprived of an income without a financial safety net." The Restaurants Association spokesman said, "We gave government a year and more time to prepare this country, and we are, and again, the industry is detonated. It's absolutely shocking." The South African Medical Association chairperson said that interprovincial traveling is going to be difficult to control, and that this is all a bit silly. The DA said that every COVID death and every job loss is basically on Ramaphosa because he has failed to roll out vaccines in a proper way or contain the spread in previous waves. And the EFF has said that until there is a mass vaccination plan for the whole country, that everyone must defy lockdown regulations. So everyone is very grumpy. Terence, are they right to be so grumpy? What are your thoughts on our latest lockdown?
Yeah, well, we had a family meeting and Dad gave us the bad news, didn't he? Look, yeah, do people have a right to be angry? Absolutely. You know, it's like the purpose of that original lockdown, you know, where we all went and baked banana bread and thought this was all great because we were going to, like, you know, and watched Outbreak on Netflix and all that sort of thing. It's not on Netflix, but I have the DVD and I did watch it. And Contagion and Pandora's Clock and all that sort of thing. And, you know, we could feel all, like, nice and scared because, like, the apocalypse happening outside. And a safe room, at least if you were living in the suburbs. If you were living in a tin shack, things looked rather different. It was to get ready so that we could actually deal with it so we didn't have to keep on locking down. But, yeah, the government dropped the ball completely on vaccines, and I'm sure that President Ramaphosa will be really shocked that people are upset. I mean, you know, it just boggles the mind that we are that we are here where we are after the past year and more. South Africa did nothing to try and bludgeon its way into the front of the queue to try and get vaccines, you know. And when you have vaccine tourism to Zimbabwe, you know you're on a bad wicket. But you know, I also think that to some extent, South Africans, you know, get what they ask for. You know, the sort of "we have found our savior" and Ramaphosa attitude that manifested last year. You know, if you if you're going to surrender your critical your ability for critical thought, well, that's kind of what you end up with. We saw a journalist the other day posting something on Twitter about, well, journalists are essential workers and we're frontline workers, so therefore we also need to be prioritized for vaccines. But all of that is very much within the sort of the state will provide and the state will decide,
right.
And we will position ourselves within that analysis. I wonder where those voices were, when the government made it clear that it and only it would decide who gets vaccinated and when. This is a mess. And it's predominantly a government mess, but it's a mess to which it led us, while many cheerleaders praised saying it as it went on.
No, exactly, and I think the scale of the mess is difficult to overstate rather. The government didn't make its initial COVAX payments, so it was basically, it just literally had no plan to acquire these vaccines to begin with. We were just expected to be given them, apparently, out of thin air. If you look at our vaccination numbers per day, you'll notice that on the weekends they're extremely low. Why is that? Because apparently money was not budgeted to pay people for overtime, and so they don't really have a lot of staff to do this on weekends. It has exposed the complete rottenness, the complete ineptitude of the state in a way that I think no crisis before quite has. And, I really, in a just world, this would be the end of the ANC for 1,000 years. Maurice, your thoughts?
I think you should tell us how you really feel about the ANC, Nick, to start off with. Yeah, I mean, there's not much I can add to that. It just, as you said, shows the complete incompetence of many people who are running the country. And what is even more shocking, or surprising, I don't know, maybe it's not actually. I mean, just a week or two ago, there was an article in the Daily Maverick saying, the pandemic has shown that NHI is necessary and we definitely have to implement it. It boggles my mind that anybody can see this. The ridiculous and incompetent way this government has handled this pandemic and think that we should create something like NHI, which will make the healthcare of every single South African fall under the government. You'll have to pay extra tax. We know there's problems with healthcare vision in South Africa, but making everybody have to be reliant on the government is a very, very bad idea. If somehow the Swiss government came and took over South Africa and was very competent and, money wasn't getting stolen, it would probably still be a bad idea because single-payer healthcare like they have in Canada doesn't really work. There's problems there. People wait very long to see specialists and stuff. And there's no reason to think that it would be any different in South Africa. And I'm pretty sure the Canadian government's probably a bit more competent than ours and they probably don't steal as much money as ours does. But just on one issue of the lockdowns, just before the show's reading about it. Now, apparently it is now a criminal offense to incite people to break lockdown regulations. So that's quite interesting. I mean, obviously the main person who's going to fall short of that is probably Julius Malema.
Yeah.
But I mean,
I have a feeling that won't be particularly enforced against him.
I think it's most probably going to be people who say silly things on Twitter and what have you. But I mean, yeah, as you said, Nick, we've had basically 500 days to prepare for this thing. Charlotte Makeke Hospital burnt down. That's still not operational.
Yeah, still not fixed.
Exactly. NASVAC Field Hospital hasn't been brought back back on stream, whatever their cases. So you really think, what have these guys been doing? I mean, twiddling their thumbs. And I mean, another thing to point out, Matt Hancock, the UK health minister, he resigned this weekend because he broke lockdown regulations. It's pretty clear that William Keyser used his influence to benefit from corrupt dealings while he was health minister. He hasn't resigned. He's only on special leave. So it tells you kind of the difference. I mean, Matt Hancock, he did the right thing because he did break lockdown rules by, getting into a twist with a married lady. And now he's obviously, I wouldn't want to be Matt Hancock right now, but he's gone and he's resigned. He's not part of the cabinet anymore. William Keyser, as far as I know, he's still technically part of the cabinet. He's probably still pulling his minister's salary. But we know it's very, very rare that an ANC politician will fall on his sword when they get caught breaking the rules and so on.
Yeah. I also, of course, forgot to mention that schools as well are expected to close from Wednesday, both public and private. So, you know, if our education system and results weren't bad already, well, they're going to be even worse. And this is what makes me so furious. The shamelessness, the utter shamelessness, the minister and the presidency, right, commenting on why South Africa's vaccination program has been so slow, said that South Africa's slow vaccination was as a result of vaccine apartheid being imposed by developed countries on the developing world. Quote, your US, your Canada, and your European countries have been hoarding vaccines. Some of them have more stock than their own actual population. We only have the vaccines because those countries invented them.
And also, it's not vaccine apartheid because you don't have vaccines because you...
Because you didn't make the payment.
Exactly. That's like saying, it's like saying it's apartheid because you can't go live in a certain complex, but you refuse to pay rent to live there. That's not apartheid. You can go live if you pay for it.
How did Zimbabwe do better at this than we did? How did Afghanistan and Somalia, which we only recently overtook, do better at this than us? In Afghanistan, people are being shot by the Taliban right now. It's a war there. More people. It is, Terrence. Am I going mad?
No. It is your reality that has gone mad. You know, it's you're fine. You're fine. You know. I wish I could do what that guy used to say at the beginning of Mythbusters. I reject your reality and substitute my own. Unfortunately, you know, this is real life. This is not this is not a bad dream. I'd like to just pick up on what Maurice was saying. Actually, what you were saying, long tentacles of the government, when it can take them off, it's never mind. Ramaphosa says, you know, that it's going to be our recovery will be state led. You know, does he intend to borrow, I don't know, the Swiss state or the Botswanan state for that matter? Maybe even the Zimbabwean state, but like we're not getting into the one we've got. What does concern me is not just the NHI, is a lot of other the government has, you know, shamelessly used this pandemic to push through a lot of stuff or to bring onto the agenda a lot of stuff that actually needs serious interrogation. This goes from from expropriation to firearms to localization strategy to, you know, XYZ. Assumption that we have this mighty East Asian style developmental state. I mean, this is a dysfunctional state.
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly a really good point to make, is that while we've been in this purgatory of lockdowns and restrictions on civil rights and all these things, the state has taken the opportunity to begin an assault on almost every single aspect of our freedoms and rights in the country. Everything from property rights and expropriation without compensation, which it's continuing ahead with despite everything. Gun rights, absolutely everything is under attack right now. And it is horrific.
Well, just let me correct you on something. I'm Catholic. You know, eventually you get out of purgatory.
Yeah.
You know, after being purged of your sins for like millennia, you get to go on. I don't think there's a guarantee here.
No, that's a good point. Maurice, any final thoughts before we move on?
I think you also got to ask why the entire country has been moved to level 4 when the Northern Cape and the Free States, their R0 number is under 1 at the moment, which means, I mean, just under 1, but that means that the virus isn't spreading, or it's not spreading exponentially in those provinces. So I think that shows part of the faults or the weaknesses in South Africa's sort of quasi-federal system, where I think it would have been probably made more sense if premiers had could have implemented lockdowns if they needed to, whether you think they work or whatever the case is. Might have made more sense for David Makuira 2 weeks ago to have moved Gauteng to a higher level of lockdown than instead of the entire country, because
you have to go and ask the permission of the command council or whatever. Exactly.
But I mean, just now, I mean, like how many people, you know, somebody in whatever, in Blikkiesdorp in the Free State, who runs a little Shabina, is probably, you know, they're not going to have income for 2 weeks or whatever the case is. And, you know, just, yeah, we're just going to see, it's going to be another bloodbath in terms of jobs and people's incomes and so on. And it's all, I mean, it was all eminently preventable if the government had, you know, got the vaccines when we needed them. And yeah, this is, it's a complete tragedy, but it is what it is and we can't change it.
Never mind the vaccines. If they had just, you know, built up hospital capacity, done all these other things, just the simple things, then even that would have made a difference. But, you know, this is, I suppose, why we can't have nice things. Anyway, before I blow a gasket, let's move on to the next topic. And this one I'm not going to put in the headline in case the YouTube algorithm punishes us. But Reuters has written an interesting article about the case of YouTube's relationship with China in one specific way, of course. So, of course, I'm sure most of our listeners know in the Xinjiang region of China, Western China, there is significant persecution of the Uyghur, Kazakh, and other Turkic minority peoples who live there. There have been some estimates, I think Human Rights Watch, these other groups have suggested that there could be up to 1 million people who have been forcibly imprisoned, essentially for not being Chinese enough or for being too Muslim in this part of China. We still don't know that much about it because, of course, China heavily restricts all information. But there are groups that have been trying to bring this to world attention and have made the case to say that what China is doing there is a gross violation of human rights. One of these groups is a Kazakh group whose founder's name I'm not even going to try and pronounce. But she was born in Xinjiang, and she now, I think, lives in Kazakhstan. She started a YouTube channel where they were interviewing members of the persecuted minorities' families, or some people who had come out of these camps. And they would basically hold up an ID card showing who they were and that they were, in fact, from these areas. And they'd say, my husband has gone missing for this many days since the police took him away, my brother, my sister, whatever. They had produced something like 11,000 videos on YouTube and had received over 120 million views since 2017. So very prolific. However, starting on June 15th, their channel was suddenly blocked by YouTube for allegedly violating YouTube's guidelines. When contacted about this, YouTube said, well, it was because they had ID cards visible in their videos, which is a violation of YouTube's terms and conditions. However, after they got their channel reinstated, they were taken down again. And it seems this time more permanently because allegedly their channel was supporting groups that may, because of concerns that they may promote violent criminal organizations. Now, that is a line that is, I think, very close to what the Chinese Communist Party's view of these human rights groups is, that they are violent criminal terrorist organizations in league with Al-Qaeda threatening to overthrow China. So I think it's probably too early to say, but this is, I think, indicative of this is at least suggestive of the idea that YouTube is at least on some level bowing to Chinese authority. Now, I think there's a number of different ways that we can look at this. One is that YouTube's automated systems, because a lot of their content moderation is done basically by robots, is being flagged because Chinese government internet soldiers basically are mass flagging these videos to get them taken down, and the system is automatically cutting them off. The other is that they're very deliberately doing this, that they are bowing to pressure from China. So I'm not sure what entirely to think of this. Maurice, let me start with you. What do you make of this? Do you think it's a big threat to freedom of speech? Just to finish up on what the human rights group, the Kazakh human rights group, has done, is they've actually moved their videos off to a different website now to keep them alive. So, Maurice, what are your thoughts on this whole issue?
Yeah, well, it's concerning, obviously. And we know that the Chinese government has been working to grow its influence around the world. We know it's using, you know, various elements of soft power, but also, I mean, you know, just it's such a big economy these days that it's quite difficult to go up against the Chinese. The Australian government's found that when they said they wanted to investigate the origins of the COVID virus. You know, then the Chinese went and slapped a whole bunch of tariffs on Australian goods, which has apparently damaged the Australian wine industry specifically. Arsenal Football Club has found that out. One of their players, a guy called Mesut Ozil, he's German, but he's of Turkish origin, so and he's a practicing Muslim. He came out and said what's happening in Xinjiang is terrible. The Arsenal Football Club distanced themselves from what Ozil said and said, no, they're not going to get involved in politics, even though they obviously don't have a problem with people supporting BLM. But, yeah, that's a different story. Yeah, so I think it's just, who knows what's happening there. There's obviously something, as you say, either direct pressure from the Chinese government or, you know, they like various internet trolls or bots or whatever you want to call them who are flagging these videos. This also comes to a bigger question, though, of when a platform like YouTube, similar to Facebook or Twitter, gets so big. Even though it's a private platform, and of course they can decide who they, you know, what the kind of stuff they carry, but when something becomes so big, in a way, it becomes part of the public square. And that's where, you know, this is it's a very interesting debate and something that's going to be with us for still a long time, I think. You know, obviously Facebook or YouTube can decide what they want. They as I said, they're private companies, but they're so big, they've effectively become the public square. And I mean, that's the whole issue about freedom of speech. You should not be prevented from saying anything in the public square except for obviously incitement to violence or whatever the cases. So, and I mean, this isn't, as I just mentioned now, I mean, this is not something that this little governments have used going back many years to say, you know, what this person's saying is, you know, dangerous, therefore their speech must be restricted. You know, I don't know if our government's competent enough now, but I was just mentioning that it's going to be legal to incite people to break lockdown rules. Who knows what kind of spurious allegations our governments could maybe use to say, I know this guy is actually saying that lockdown rules should be broken when actually he wasn't saying that, and, you know, this is why his speech must be restricted, whatever the case is. But, yeah, this is, I think this just shows you that the power of the Chinese government, and it's something that's going to be with us for a while, and I think at least the first half of the 21st century is going to be defined by battles between the Chinese government and other countries who are, you know, it's basically going to be kind of, I think it's going to be similar to what happened in the first half of the 20th century, where it was the global democracies versus the rise of fascism. And I think that could be something we see now. Also, democracies on one side, and then countries like China with state capitalism, restrictive political activity and so on, versus democracies of the world. So I think, yeah, that's obviously the main thing. I think, yeah, so watch this space and see what happens in the next 30 years up until 2050.
Terence, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, look, I think that regular viewers of the show will know that I'm not the greatest fan of the Communist Party of China. But, you know, I think that what we're seeing here is, if indeed there is an element of bowing to pressure, this is corporate capitalism at its worst. This is siding. This is removing the possibility of using those platforms for something socially and politically meaningful, in order to appease the sort of worst instincts of the world's current current political culture. You know, I think it, irrespective of how this came about, you know, you mentioned the prospect of internet warriors. The Chinese have recognized these weaknesses in a way I don't think the Soviets ever did. The Soviet Union would sort of dismiss the people's longings for freedom, you know, and say, well, we give you security. In the case of the Chinese, they've in a sense appropriated a lot of that language. I remember, well, a senior Chinese diplomat saying at a conference I attended abroad, China believes in democracy, it believes in human rights, and he leaned forward almost conspiratorially and said, but with a Chinese understanding. And that's the sort of door you can open or close as widely as you as widely as you want. And if you happen to be some sort of loudmouth Uyghur, you're out of luck and that door shuts very, very firmly in your face. But yeah, you know, I think also there's a horrible kind of precedent here that, you know, if you can roll it out to a platform like YouTube, to keep exposure or discussion of your internal affairs. You know, how far does that can that go? You know, someone speaking up for Taiwan, for instance, finds themselves under this sort of pressure. Then it becomes someone speaking in favor of a hawkish U.S. government position on China, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I think this is something that the corporate sector would do well to keep in mind, that ultimately freedom is good for them long term. It's often very costly short term, but those short term costs should be seen as a long term investment. Unfortunately, I think, you know, it takes a particular type of mindset to realize that, and we don't always see that.
No, I definitely agree with that. All right, very briefly, we're just going to cover the last topic for today in 1 or 2 minutes. Of course, COVID third wave and all these things, we are once again seeing the prospect of election postponements being raised by various groups, especially the EFF, who are very keen on this. Marius, what are your thoughts on the possibility that this might happen? I assume you agree it would be a very bad thing if it did happen.
If we knew that the election was only going to get postponed for 2 or 3 months, I think that's something we could look at. But that said, as it stands now, there's no constitutional mechanism to allow for postponement of the election in South Africa. In South Africa, terms of municipal councils and parliaments and the various provincial legislatures, I think it's 5 years and 3 months. So by law, there has to be, by the latest, an election has to be held within 5 years and 3 months of the last election. And there's no constitutional mechanism to change that. If there is to be a postponement, we're going to have an emergency constitutional amendment to allow for the president to push this back. So as I say, I'm not, this COVID issue is, it's a once in a century event. So if the elections are pushed back by 2 or 3 months, I would not say, you know, I don't think it's a knee-jerk thing to say this is, you know, the startings of a dictatorship or whatever in South Africa. A lot of other things point to that, not necessarily election postponements. But yeah, I don't see it happening just because there's no constitutional mechanism. And we've seen other countries around the world that managed to hold elections fairly safely during this time of COVID. And hopefully this election is scheduled for, I think, the 27th of October. By then, I mean, if we're still in the middle of a third wave then we're in trouble. With any luck, we'll also have managed to, the third wave will have receded by somewhat, and we'd also hopefully be much closer to herd immunity, just from number of people who have been infected by COVID previously, and with people who hopefully a lot more people have been vaccinated by then. So yeah, I mean, I don't see it happening. We're going to probably hear a lot of noise about it, but I don't see it postponed happening.
So I think one of the other things to note is that no one is actually suggesting that it be postponed by 1 or 2 months or something like that. The vast bulk of proponents of postponing the election are people who are saying, no, we must push it to 2024 so that it lines up with the national provincial elections. And that is a very bad thing. And I think that gives the game away that this is not really about COVID or something. It's really about making sure that a unpopular ANC doesn't necessarily have to face the electorate at this time. Terence, in 30 seconds or so, your closing remarks on this topic.
Well, you know, I think that this could be another example of using the COVID pandemic to push a policy, because the ANC has previously said it wants to hold these things together, because national issues tend to resonate with its support base more than local ones, especially given the state of local government, and maybe that's a good shield that they could hide behind. So that does concern me. So I think really it becomes a matter of exactly what are the terms on which any postponement is based.
No, exactly. Anyway, that's all the time we have for today. We hope you enjoyed the show and found it interesting. Please share it. Please like it. Please comment. All these things are very good for us. Please rate us 5 stars on whatever podcast app you listen to us on. And if you want to support the Institute of Race Relations and fund the work we do and the media voice we give and all that sort of stuff, please SMS your name to 328. 328-23. Just double check. And we'll call you back to sign you up as a friend. All right. Thanks very much, everyone. and have a wonderful day. Cheers.